winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Oh, Thursday was a bad day to be a former member of the Senate's Independent Democratic Conference.
Let's review primary day results here in New York. Starting off with the statewide races, and the biggest matchup of them all turned into a rout from the get-go. Andrew Cuomo, who suffered a very bad news week up until September 13th, which we'll get to at the Reporters' Roundtable, easily defeated actress and activist Cynthia Nixon by virtually the same percentage she won in 2014. The governor did not have any victory night celebration, instead tweeting out a thank you later that night. In a cafe in Brooklyn, Cynthia Nixon thanked supporters.
We took on one of the most powerful governors in America, and it wasn't easy. We had to fight just to get on the ballot. We had to fight just to get a debate. And we started with nothing, and we earned every single vote. And the establishment came at us with everything they had. Our allies and endorsers were threatened. My family was slandered. The other side spent $25 million trying to drown us out. But we wouldn't back down. We refused to be quiet, and we made our voices heard. And while the result tonight was not what we hoped for, I am not discouraged, I am inspired, and I hope you are too.
In what was supposed to be the tightest and perhaps most unpredictable matchup, Tish James went on to win the Attorney General race. The New York City public advocate, with a big boost from the city she represents, won easily, getting 38% of the vote. Zephyr Teachout finished in second at 29%.
Tonight, we are one step closer to having the first woman and the first woman of color elected Attorney General of New York State. And I am dedicating this victory to every little girl who has been told that she could not change the world. Every little girl who's been told to get back. Every little girl who's been told, no, you've got to stay in your lane and stay in your corner and stay in your neighborhood. Every little girl who unfortunately has been discounted. And every little girl who has consistently and repeatedly overachieved. To all those little girls out there, I believe in you. So today, little girls, you stand up, you face the television, and you say, that's me.
And the battle for lieutenant governor was the closest of all the statewide races. Incumbent Kathy Hochul staved off New York City Councilman Jumaane Williams 48-42%. The real drama was in the Democratic primaries for the state Senate, where six of the eight former members of the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, were ousted. The biggest win of them all came for Alessandra Biaggi, who knocked off the former IDC leader and longtime legislator, Jeff Klein. Also losing, Marisol Alcantara from the Bronx, Jesse Hamilton from Brooklyn, Jose Peralta from Queens, Tony Avella also from Queens, and Central New York's David Valesky hasn't conceded yet. He's down by 600 votes, with 669 absentee ballots still to count. One more, a non-IDC senator, Martin DeLon. He was beat by Julia Salazar. All right, this week's New York Now poll question asks, what was the biggest primary day storyline? You see the choices there on screen. Let us know by voting at nynow.org.
All right, and now for some analysis of a lot of developments out of primary night, I am happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Yancey Roy, Bureau Chief for Long Island's Newsday, Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio, and of course my partner Matt Ryan. Okay, well, let's take it down the list, as it were. Starting, of course, with the top of the ticket, Andrew Cuomo, as widely predicted in every poll we saw, routed Cynthia Nixon 2-1. but managed to get the same percentage that Zephyr Teachout got in 2014.
Well, I think it shows that big money donors, TV ads, union support really pays off, even at the risk that you're accused of pay to play and the corruption risk that we saw with the convictions of some of his former top aides. I think it shows that in some ways it's still worth it because he still got two-thirds of the Democratic vote of the Democrats that came out to the polls.
I think also what was at play here was he took this race a lot more seriously than he did in 2014. As we all recall, in 2014, when he faced a primary from Zephyr Teachout, it was basically to ignore it, not really campaign, not get out there at all, not spend a lot of money. He did the opposite this time. He spent $16 million since July. They did a lot of partnering with unions to really drive the get out the vote effort. And as we saw statewide, the turnout was really pretty good for a Democratic primary. And I think that was because they put a lot of effort into it this time.
And he ran like he thought he could lose. He seemed nervous. He made some of those gaffes, like saying America was never great. They engaged in some dirty politics, sending out that mailer accusing Nixon falsely of anti-Semitism, which was starting to make people wonder, was he seeing some polls that others weren't? Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right, Yancey. I think he just didn't want to take any chances that he really needed to shore this up and win big.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. He wasn't taking any chances. I mean, I don't watch a ton of TV, but whenever I was watching the TV, Andrew Cuomo's spots were playing constantly, whether it was during a Yankee game or the network news. He wasn't taking any chances.
Do you think that this was due perhaps to the Joe Crowley factor after he lost near the end of June to Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez.
Sorry, yes. It's been a while now. That sent a shiver up the spine, certainly of a ton of incumbents, but especially insider traditional Democrats like Andrew Cuomo.
Absolutely. We've seen this string of upsets, often with congressional races by and large, where a newcomer, a fresh face, has ousted a veteran. And it's all been part of what some folks have called this national progressive insurgency inside the Democratic Party. I think Cuomo was smart enough to realize, you know, anyone is vulnerable. Anyone is potentially vulnerable to that right now. And that's why he treated this race much differently than 2014.
You know, I think where Cuomo really
it's been a
found
late night for all of
his
us.
Footing was the anti-Trump message that he had in the final days. He didn't mention Cynthia Nixon at all. It was all about, I'm best equipped to fight President Trump and his policies. And Democrats in this state, they hate President Trump and they're really afraid of him. And I think that resonated in the end. They said, you know what, he's the guy who's going to fight against policies that we're afraid are going to take away our rights or that we don't agree with. And I think that when he started doing that, that's when I think he really shored up the support in the end.
For all the criticism that the governor got, I mean, he had a resounding victory. And here's a great quote from the New York Times story Friday morning. The race cemented both Mr. Cuomo's standing as an unmatched force in New York politics and a merciless tactician with little regard for diplomacy.
Well, okay, let's talk about, before we move on to other races, let's discuss the really terrible final week that the governor had, which included the curiously timed ceremony last Friday opening the new Tappan Zee Bridge replacement, the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge, as well as, Karen alluded to it, the mailer that went out from the state Democratic committee that accused Cynthia Nixon of being soft on anti-Semitism, which created tremendous blowback from almost every corner of not only the party, but also kind of, I would say, the larger bipartisan political establishment in the state. And that mailer ultimately, Cuomo's team was forced to admit, had been vetted by no less than the governor's former secretary, Larry Schwartz, who said, oh yeah, I looked at it, but I didn't read the bad stuff. I only looked at the positive stuff, which, I mean, I can't prove that they're lying about that, but it does not have the ring of truth.
No. It's not believable.
He totally threw Larry Schwartz under the bus with that one. But yeah, I think that it just shows that he was going to stop at nothing to win this race, using the power of his office to perhaps open that bridge prematurely when it turned out that it couldn't be opened and they had to close the lane because the old bridge might have fallen onto the new bridge. And the mailer, unfortunately, I think it had its effect. It probably worked on some people who weren't paying that much attention and just saw that and said, oh, that's a horrible thing that woman believes in. I wouldn't vote for her.
Right. I mean, it went out to, what, roughly 10,000 homes just days before the primary. at a time of Jewish holidays.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of people, I'm surmising here, who just saw it, and that was the last thing they saw. It was none of the subsequent news stories about the controversy, even clarifying that really none of the claims were really true. But they have this mailer, and I wouldn't be surprised if that did impact some of the votes. That said, if it had an impact, all it maybe did was tinker at the margins a little bit. I mean, the governor ends up winning by about 30 points here. And, you know, I think by and large, even any of these little last minute tactics, even if they helped him push it up a point or two, I don't think it changes the overall story here.
And it brought back a lot of those stories from the 1977 mayoral race with Mario Cuomo when he was going up against Ed Koch, and the notion that Andrew Cuomo might have had something to do with those signs that said vote for Cuomo, not the homo. Of course, Cuomo has denied that all these years. But it's just the play of dirty politics comes up with Andrew Cuomo again.
And that caused tensions with the gay community for many years, I think until he promoted and legalized same-sex marriage in 2011.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to the attorney general race, where Cuomo got what he wanted once again with the nomination of Tish James, who was his handpicked candidate, over Zephyr Teachout. Going down the list of finishers, mm-hmm. Zephyr Teachout, Sean Patrick Maloney, and Leisha Eve.
Well, once again, she benefited from being the party's choice and from the unions and the Get Out the Vote effort, and also name recognition in New York City. She's mm-hmm. the New York City public advocate and pretty prominent and out there in the news on, you know, advocating for a lot of issues, so I think that helped her a lot. And, you know, also she seemed pretty qualified to do the job.
The total number of votes that Tish James got in New York City alone almost exceeded the total for Zephyr Teachout, who got 29% and came in second. So the five boroughs came in huge for her.
I think it also underscores the importance of unions in statewide Democratic parties
all
in New York.
All those press releases that we got saying that this elected official was going for Tish James.
Right. In a crowded race, in a four-way race in New York, where none of the candidates have great name recognition, honestly, the union support and the Get Out the Vote efforts for the unions often make a difference. And we've seen that. Let's go back to Eric Schneiderman as attorney general. He was in a crowded primary
2010.
For AG in 2010. He had the most union support. He emerged as the victor. Let's go to 2014, the Cuomo Zephyr Teachout gubernatorial primary. Kind of the reverse there. Cuomo was at war with a lot of the unions. They either backed Teachout or sat on their hands. And Cuomo won, but the percentage that Teachout got was very surprising. And I think all of that, again, shows the especially in a primary, Democratic primary, the unions are a real force in New York.
I think also shows that new media, social media, doesn't work quite yet. It may
100%,
in
I
a
agree.
Few years, but if you're going to run a campaign and not take big money and mostly do it on, you know, videos or clips on, you know, Facebook or Twitter, it does, at least in New York, where, as you said, you know, you have so many opportunities to advertise on television, it doesn't work quite yet. I think with the younger people and the next generation, it may, but right now it's not.
We saw that Teachout had that momentum. You know, she was getting all the headlines. She got big endorsements. She was campaigning with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez up in New Paltz mm-hmm. and also along in Queens, but she's not from New York City, and she did not do well in New York City, and that's
why
she lost.
Well, it also raises the question of, are we seeing a ceiling on the percentage of vote of what we kind of shorthand by saying the progressive left in New York? Zephyr Teachout, 34% in 14. Cynthia Nixon, 35% this year, even though she's much more well-known, had much more press coverage this year. Is that mid-30s percent, are we seeing that as maybe a ceiling mm-hmm. for what the progressive left can turn out in a primary?
That's a great point.
And also one-third of Democrats who just won't vote for Cuomo no matter what.
Which is also fairly considerable, right. Considering that he has been governor for mm-hmm. two terms.
Yeah.
Let's jump back to the executive chamber for a moment mm-hmm. and mention that the governor also got what he wanted, but much more narrowly in the race for a lieutenant governor, where Kathy Hochul defeated Jumaane Williams by roughly 6 or so points.
As we were watching the Board of Election returns throughout the night, Jumaane Williams was up for most of the night. And there was, I'm sure there were some worried people in the Cuomo camp, but he didn't quite do well enough in New York City to stave off the upstate swing that Kathy Hochul got.
Yeah, and Hochul, to give her credit, she worked really hard.
She was in New York City constantly.
She was in New York City all summer. Sometimes she'd have five events a day.
Yep.
So she really worked it and kind of earned her way back, because she was pretty unknown in New York City and there were a lot of worries.
And there were a lot of commercials with her, with Andrew Cuomo mentioned
every,
by name.
Every Cuomo
especially
ad that I saw in the last month
made
a point to say Andrew Cuomo and Kathy Hochul.
And I think when voters chose Cuomo, they decided, well, that's the person he wants, Hochul. So we should give him the lieutenant governor that he wants and not vote for somebody else who, you know, Jumaane Williams said he would essentially be a thorn in Cuomo's side, hold his feet to the fire, make him accountable. And I guess
was Zephyr Teachout's argument
yes,
as well.
That's
elect
right.
me, I'll be my own woman, and I will make things tougher
think,
for Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, I think once they made the decision for Cuomo, they're like, okay, well, he wants these people. Well, then we'll go along with it.
And if you look at the borough breakdown within New York City, one thing I found, and I didn't see the final numbers, but it looked as though Hochul would actually win Queens and the Bronx, whereas Williams won Manhattan and Brooklyn. And I thought, you know, early on in the night when you saw Queens and the Bronx going for Hochul, you kind of told yourself maybe that's good for her and bad for Williams. If she's able to even win one of those city boroughs,
True.
You know she's going to win upstate. You're pretty sure she's going to win Long Island, which she did easily. In some ways, that might have been the difference right there, that Williams didn't score as well as his camp had hoped in Queens and the Bronx.
Also, when she went to Buffalo and had no schedule for primary night evening, I thought, is that a sign that she thinks she's going to lose? And she just, you know, because she's from Buffalo, she's like, I'm going back to Buffalo.
But,
I don't want to deal with this.
That Andrew Cuomo has done really, really, really well in the Bronx in the last two primaries in 2014 and in this year. In 2014, he beat Teachout by 34,000. I mean, he crushed her. So he's got a large base of support there.
He's and Queens
a good,
boy.
And a good relationship with the Bronx
with Ruben Diaz Jr.
Ruben Diaz Jr.
Right.
too. So I think that's helped. And, you know, again, he has, you know, worked all of these things for a long time.
Yep.
Using the power of his office, he's always making economic development announcements. You can argue whether it's really creating jobs or not, but people see him out there. He's in those communities. So, you know, and I think that paid off. And he certainly used the power of his office in this campaign, too, by making announcements in key places.
Okay, and now let's talk about incumbents who did not get what they wanted this time around. And that means the majority of the members, the former members of the Senate's IDC conference, Tony Avella, Jesse Hamilton, Marisol Alcantara, Dave Valesky, and of course, the man behind the curtain for the IDC, Jeff Klein, all lost their Democratic primaries. That is remarkable in a chamber, in a legislature, where incumbency is golden.
It's sort of an interesting trend there in that what we saw at the statewide level is maybe a limit on the progressive vote and how far it could take it. But in these specific districts, where the districts are smaller, the demographics can be changed over a course of a short time, not unlike Joe Crowley's loss in June in the congressional primary, it was easier to pick off so-called establishment candidates in these smaller districts than it would be on a statewide level.
I think the Trump era changed everything, because suddenly Democratic voters were aware that these breakaway Democrats, they helped the Republicans stay in power in the state Senate.
Very
and
true.
Even though that had been going on for a long time, they suddenly found it completely intolerable. And they blamed them. They didn't blame Cuomo for it, who was friendly with the IDC, but they all got punished.
When that anti-IDC pushback has been going on for months, it's not just a new phenomenon. I mean, there were those rallies and meetings in like February and January where some of these like Jesse Hamilton and Jose Peralta just got shouted down. So there was an anger for a long period of time, and Jeff Klein losing, that is huge. Alessandra Biaggi, who was the woman who defeated him, she ran a very very good campaign, had a slick campaign commercial, very effective. We sometimes overuse the term grassroots support, but she apparently was really going neighborhood to neighborhood and just accumulating votes after votes.
It's sort of interesting that, you know, we use this shorthand like IDC for Independent Democratic Conference, and all of this insider talk in Albany often doesn't actually get out there into the general electorate. And so I think part of what you saw was the progressive activists really succeeded in taking what was somewhat of an arcane insider language argument that probably a lot of people didn't pay, and making it front and center a campaign issue. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I've always had trouble explaining it in my news stories. I have to take a paragraph just to explain what it is to people. But yeah, people in New York City really started getting woke about that.
I vividly remember getting a call a couple of weeks after the 2016 general election from a woman in Tony Avella's district who said, "Was I aware that Tony Avella was a member of a conference that was partnered with Republicans?" And I said, "Well, yes, actually, I was aware of that. It's been going on for six years.
And once it resonated with people, they were really outraged.
Right, because this conference was around since, 2011? It wasn't a Johnny-come-lately.
Yeah. The day that Cuomo made his first State of the State speech, Jeff Klein announced the conference, which I think should have been a sign right there that Cuomo, it condoned it.
But the David Valesky lost. I mean, he's from Syracuse, way up in central New York, far, far away from most of these other IDC members. I mean,
mild-mannered,
that's the growth of this movement. It went all the way up to 87 and made a left on I-90.
And don't forget the IDC rejoined with the rest of the Democrats in April, hoping to stave off these
primaries. Didn't really help, did it?
And it was just too little, too late, apparently.
Yeah. In a way, it was like they couldn't be forgiven.
Right.
At all.
Maricel Alcantara became one of a very elite club, being a one-term member of the state Senate. You don't see that very often, where someone gets elected and then they're out 2 years later.
Yeah, they got to wonder, maybe they shouldn't have joined the IDC.
Oh, I'm sure she's second-guessing herself.
You know, some of them still would have been there.
Oh, she could have been in office for a decade plus.
Yeah, he was a big advocate for the Dream Act. They could have stayed.
In some ways, I think you saw where the winds were going a few weeks ago when some of the endorsements started rolling in for at least some of the IDC members. And I'm thinking especially of Kirsten Gillibrand, the sitting U.S. senator who endorsed four specific candidates, not the entire slate, but four. Look, these guys are usually very strategic about their endorsements. They're not going to endorse someone they think is a sure loser.
Right.
So when Gillibrand, kind of unprompted, jumped in and endorsed four, I think that was a signal that, all of these IDC people might be in a lot of trouble.
But one thing we should mention is that that this does not mean that Democrats are going to rule the Senate.
That's right. There's still something called the general election.
This is still Democrat on Democrat, and they still have the same makeup where there's only 31 Democrats in the conference because there's one Democrat, Senator Simca Felder, who meets with the Republicans. And Felder won his primary challenge, and we haven't heard that he's going to join the Democrats anytime soon. So they need to pick up seats.
And on that, does that mean the Valesky seat in Syracuse is now open for the Republicans to take back after 14 years?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Valesky was a moderate Democrat who held onto that seat by, again, being a moderate and his personality. Now that's an open seat in a district that's pretty divided. And I got to imagine the Republicans have gone from, maybe not trying too hard in that district to maybe pouring in a lot of money and picking up an upstate seat.
And that was a seat Tom Libous, the late Tom Libous from Binghamton, always talked about. We're going to have a challenger for David Valesky. John DeFrancisco, another central New York senator, said the same thing. But after he joined the IDC, you really didn't hear that much.
Okay, but if the mainline Democratic Conference is able to prevail in November, and Democratic enthusiasm certainly suggest that they have reason to sleep soundly at night, at least for right now. Is it going to make it easier to impose discipline on the conference in a way that the conference was unable to do back in the bad old days of 2009 and 2010 when Democrats briefly controlled the chamber?
Well, I think so, because all of these IDC challengers who won are going to be new members, so they're going to maybe listen more to the leadership. Oh, I don't know, though. We'll have to see. Democrats are Democrats, right? They're pretty independent.
It's hard to predict, but they've also been sort of through this wilderness, might be overstating it, but this period here of extreme frustration where they could have had the majority more than once, if you count Simca Felder, and they've been frustrated by that. So it wouldn't surprise me if that all of that helps create more cohesion on the Democrats if they win the majority than what we saw almost a decade ago.
And it comes back to leadership as well, right? And the whole reason the IDC was created, because you had three leaders who eventually went to jail, and Malcolm Smith and John Sampson and Pedro Espada. I mean, it was a disaster from a leadership perspective. And so now it's incumbent upon Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Mike Gianaris to not let that happen.
We've got about a minute left. Let's end on an up note. In 2014, primary participation was 570,000 votes. On Thursday night, it was 1.5 million based on the current numbers. And that's remarkable.
And that's even though it was on a random Thursday in September, and that you had to register to vote to be a Democrat a long time in advance. So I think that that shows that people were certainly more interested.
There's far more campaigning. There's far more TV money spent. There was far more, frankly, news stories from all of us than in 2014, which was kind of sleepy by comparison. Right.
And will those people come out again on November 6th? And will it, how many congressional races will it affect? That's what I'm kind of looking at.
All right,
good
well,
point.
That's where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Yancey Roy of Newsday, Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, and, of course, my partner here at WMHT, Matt Ryan. That's all for us this week. Thank you for voting, if you did, and thank you for watching. We'll see you next week right here on New York Now.